Vernet led them to the rear loading dock and motioned to one of the bank's small armored trucks, which represented another service offered by the Depository Bank of Zurich.
"Get in the cargo hold," he said, heaving open the massive rear door. "I'll be right back."
As Sophie and Langdon climbed in, Vernet hurried across the loading dock to the dock overseer's office, let himself in, collected the keys for the truck, and found a driver's uniform jacket and cap. Shedding his own suit coat and tie, he began to put on the driver's jacket. Reconsidering, he donned a shoulder holster beneath the uniform. On his way out, he grabbed a driver's pistol from the rack, put in a clip, and stuffed it in the holster, buttoning his uniform over it. Returning to the truck, Vernet pulled the driver's cap down low and peered in at Sophie and Langdon, who were standing inside the empty steel box.
"Not a sound on our way out," Vernet said.
Sophie and Langdon sat down on the metal floor of the compartment. Langdon cradled the treasure wadded inside his tweed jacket. Swinging the heavy doors closed, Vernet locked them inside. Then he got in behind the wheel. As the armored truck powered up the ramp, the exit beckoned. Except for the police car blocking the top of the ramp. Vernet pulled forward. A lanky officer stepped out and waved him to a stop a few meters from the roadblock. Vernet stopped. Pulling his driver's cap down farther, he affected as rough a facade as he could and opened the door.
"Je suis Jérôme Collet," the agent said. "Lieutenant police judiciaire."
He motioned to the truck's cargo hold and asked what was inside.
"Hell if I know," Vernet replied in crude French. "I'm only a driver."
"Open your truck, please."
Collet motioned toward the cargo hold. Vernet stared at the agent and forced an obnoxious laugh.
"Open the truck? You think I have keys? You think they trust us? You should see the crap wages I get paid."
The agent's head tilted to one side, his skepticism evident.
"You're telling me you don't have keys to your own truck?"
Vernet shook his head.
"Not the cargo area. Ignition only. These trucks get sealed by overseers on the loading dock. Then the truck sits in dock while someone drives the cargo keys to the drop-off. Once we get the call that the cargo keys are with the recipient, then I get the okay to drive. Not a second before. I never know what the hell I'm lugging."
"When was this truck sealed?"
"Must have been hours ago. I'm driving all the way up to Saint-Réal tonight."
The agent made no response, his eyes probing as if trying to read Vernet's mind.
"You mind?"
he said, motioning to the police car blocking his way.
"I'm on a tight schedule."
The agent paused and finally stepped aside. Silas lay prone on the straw mat in his room. He had yet to remove the Silas belt, and he could feel the blood trickling down his inner thigh. Still, he could not justify removing the strap.
"I have failed the church. Far worse, I have failed the bishop."
Tonight was supposed to be Bishop Aringarosa's salvation. It was Aringarosa who had put his loyal follower Silas in contact with the man who had proposed the plan, a man who called himself the Teacher. Although the Teacher and Silas never met face to face, each time they spoke by phone, Silas was awed both by the profundity of the Teacher's faith and by the scope of his power. The Teacher seemed to be a man who knew all. How the Teacher gathered his information, Silas did not know, but Aringarosa had placed enormous trust in the Teacher, and he had told Silas to do the same. But now it seemed the Teacher had been tricked. The keystone was a devious dead end. Finally, Silas crawled to his feet and found his robe, which lay on the floor. He dug his cell phone from the pocket. Hanging his head in shame, he dialed.
"Teacher,"
he whispered,
"all is lost."
Silas truthfully told the man how he had been tricked.
"You lose your faith too quickly," the Teacher replied. "I have just received news, most unexpected and welcome. The secret lives. Jacques Saunier transferred information before he died. I will call you soon. Our work tonight is not yet done."
Inside the dimly lit cargo hold of the armored truck, Langdon clutched the bizarre treasure they had extricated from the bank.
"I think we're on the highway now,"
Sophie whispered. Langdon sensed the same thing. The truck, after an unnerving pause atop the bank ramp, was now accelerating to what felt like top speed. Forcing his attention to the rosewood box in his arms, Langdon laid the precious bundle on the floor, unwrapped his jacket, and extracted the box. Sophie shifted her position so they were sitting side by side. In contrast to the warm colors of the rosewood box, the inlaid rose had been crafted of a pale wood, probably ash, which shone clearly in the dim light.
"Go ahead," Sophie said. "Open it."
Langdon took a deep breath. Reaching for the lid, he stole one more admiring glance at the intricate woodwork and then, unhooking the clasp, he opened the lid, revealing the object within. Langdon had harbored several fantasies about what they might find inside this box, but clearly he had been wrong on every account. Nestled snugly inside the box's heavily padded interior of crimson silk lay an object Langdon could not even begin to comprehend. Crafted of polished white marble, it was a stone cylinder, approximately the dimensions of a tennis ball can. More complicated than a simple column of stone, however, the cylinder appeared to have been assembled in many pieces. 5 donut-sized discs of marble had been stacked and affixed to one another within a delicate brass framework. It looked like some kind of tubular multi-wheeled kaleidoscope. Each end of the cylinder was affixed with an end cap, also marble, making it impossible to see inside. As mystifying as the construction of the cylinder was, however, it was the engravings around the tube's circumference that drew Langdon's primary focus. Each of the discs had been carefully carved with the same unlikely series of letters, the entire alphabet.
"Amazing, isn't it?" Sophie whispered.
Langdon glanced up. "I don't know. What the hell is it?" Now there was a glint in Sophie's eye.
"My grandfather used to craft these as a hobby. They were invented by Leonardo da Vinci."
"Da Vinci?" Langdon muttered, looking again at the canister.
"Yes, it's called a cryptex. According to my grandfather, the blueprints come from one of da Vinci's secret diaries."
"What is it for?" Considering tonight's events, Sophie knew the answer might have some interesting implications.
"It's a vault," she said, "for storing secret information."
Langdon's eyes widened further. Sophie explained that creating models of da Vinci's inventions was one of her grandfather's best-loved hobbies. Da Vinci had drawn up blueprints for hundreds of inventions he had never built.
"He made me one of these when I was little," Sophie said, "but I've never seen one as ornate and large."